You're listening to a High Voltage Radio Network podcast. Find more at highvoltageradio.com.
This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Down with the king!
Yo, you know what it's about, so let's tell them why you're mad.
You know what really grinds my gears?
A man!
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
Now for something completely different.
It's time for a royal rant, presented by the Kings of Sport.
Celebration tonight here in Oakland. And James rushing up the floor. Three-pointer is good with 14.2 remaining. And now Golden State can dribble it out. There it is. Redemption for Golden State. One of the great playoff runs of all time is complete.
Changing the game one show at a time, aka the world's most dangerous sports show, aka iTunes' longest running weekly episodic sports program, produced and hosted by two or more African Americans that are not affiliated with a major network. I'm your host, as always, the godfather Nate Milton. And unfortunately, dear listeners, this week, Brother Lightskin Marcus Vandenberg, my partner in crime, is unavailable. He's on assignment. And so, there's so much to talk about this week, whether we talk about the NBA or the NHL or the upcoming WWE events, that I figured it wouldn't be right. I wouldn't be doing my due diligence as a host if I just did this thing solo. So we brought in a special co-host for this Royal Rant edition of the Kings of Sport. He is a friend of the program. He is a fellow podcaster. He is a fledgling wrestling tycoon. And as of last week, I didn't even know this, but I guess apparently he is one of Jim Comey's homies. So, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the program, TJ McClune. TJ, what's going on, my brother?
James Comey, huge in the basketball game in D.C., from what I heard. He plays on the Supreme Court court and has a great low post game. I can't wait to see him on the NBA All-Star Game weekend, D-ing up Drake this coming year in New Orleans, wherever the hell they'll have in the NBA All-Star Game.
Yeah, I heard Comey can defend 1-5. He's like the LeBron of the D.C. League.
Yeah, it's true. And if I knew another FBI director, I would say he is not as good as that director to do the LeBron-MJ comparison to make that joke work. But I'm spacing, so I'll quickly roll out of that joke and that horribleness. And 2 minutes in, already derailing your podcast. It's a record for me. It's a record
I'll pick up your joke, though. I'll take the assist. And, you know, J. Edgar Hoover had a jump shot. But you could get him on the crossover because those heels kept getting in the way.
Yeah, and I think he's more stocky of a person, too. He's kind of like a Robert Tractor Trailer. You know, very a lot of beef going on down the nether regions, if you want to go from there.
I don't want to go from there, so I think we will move on, TJ. It's been a few weeks since the listeners last heard from you, so what have you been up to, my friend?
Inspire Pro Wrestling. If you haven't gotten on our bandwagon, you should. It's because it's the only place you can go in Texas and see a show where you're going to watch Keith Lee, up and coming, the biggest superstar that's out there right now. And if you're in California, you'll see him out in Reseda pretty soon, as him versus Leo Rush was announced, I think today. I saw him post on his Facebook and Twitter. But the last show we have up for free, License to Death Wish, had Leo Rush, had Keith Lee, had Joey Ryan, Candice LeRae, some of my favorite wrestlers as well that people don't know about, and Davey Vega, Delilah Doom, Steve Areno, and the list goes on and on and on. Matt Fitchett, so we have the besties in the world on the show as well. So go find it, YouTube, Inspire for Wrestling, License to Death Wish, Keith Lee and Sammy Guevara headline the show, and in it, that match has Sammy diving at Keith as fast as he can. Keith catches him and power bombs him on a set of bleachers.
Nice.
Yes.
Nice. Sounds good.
Great show.
And where can the people check that action out again?
It's either Inspire Pro Wrestling on Twitter, on Facebook, or on YouTube as well. We have last show from what month did we have that in? God, the months go just blend into each other now. What month are we? We're in June. So our last show in May 28th is when we had it. It's up on YouTube for free, the entire show.
Sounds good, brother. Sounds like a stacked roster and plenty of potential champions, which is a perfect segue into our topics of discussion this week as we have two newly crowned champions, Brother McClune.
Oh, are they newly crowned or are they repeating league crowned? And, you know, had a little misstep as well. I don't know where you can say newly crowned, unless you want to talk about the Warriors. Yes, they regained their belt in a very quick hot potato title switch, but there's a reigning defending champion out there that I cannot wait to thump my chest about, because in my sports fandom, I am insanely unhinged when it comes to one team and one team only, and we'll get to that team here in a second.
Yes, and if this were the TJ McClune show featuring Nate, we would be talking hockey first, but since this is the Kings of Sport, this week featuring TJ,
that's right,
we're talking basketball.
That's right.
And so the Golden State Warriors are your new champs once again, mm-hmm. as they defeated the Cleveland Cavaliers in a gentleman's sweep. And after, you know, to use wrestling terminology, after Cleveland got the hope spot on Friday, the Warriors came back and finished things out like we thought they would, defeating the Cavaliers. And now we've got Steph is a two-time champ, Dre and Clay is two-time champs, and Kevin Durant finally hosting up the Larry O'Brien. So what did you make of the series, TJ?
That the Warriors needed Kevin Durant to beat Cleveland, and to beat LeBron James, you needed not just a great team, which the Warriors winning 73 games last season and beating the 96 Bulls regular season record and coming one game really from becoming a three-peat champ, or back-to-back at the time, and this year getting Durant being three-peat, they needed Durant to take down LeBron. And I, you know, the topic is LeBron, Jordan, because those are two best basketball players that have ever played the game in the NBA. But you never saw a Portland have to go out and get another superstar to take down Michael, or say Phoenix or Seattle or Utah, the 2 years they've played each other. It's not like Karl Malone went out and got, you know, Penny Hardaway off of the Orlando Magic to go play with Stockton and Malone at the time to take down Jordan. So it just shows how great LeBron is and how much you have to load up against him to take down this demigod of a basketball player.
Yeah, I thought, you know, again, this was the outcome that I expected. I predicted the Warriors in six. I think Marcus predicted the gentleman sweep, Dubs in five. And, yeah, they had the better talent. Like, I don't think there's any shame in Cleveland for losing this. Course,
no.
This opens the door for the LeBron haters out there to diminish his legacy. And I think, man, the Jordan comparison, I think it's an unwinnable one for LeBron. I think until people of our generation and older are no longer breathing air on this planet, there's no barbershop, there's no bar, there's no, you know, gathering of people where you've got, you know, mixed generations in the building where LeBron James is going to be the overwhelming choice for the greatest basketball player ever. It's not going to happen. But I do think that LeBron, with his performance in defeat, being the first player to ever average a triple-double in the NBA Finals.
Right.
And if you look at his last, I think somebody put up last night, like his last 10 or 11 Finals games. Like, you can't label this guy a choker or a disappointment. His teams haven't always won the title. You know, he's 3-5 now,
yeah,
in NBA Finals. But other than his time with the Heat, I can't think of a time where he walked onto the court with the better team.
He never
like
has.
First Cleveland team was, he willed that team to get there. And then 2 years ago with the first Warriors-Cavs series, he was basically a one-man show with Kyrie and Kevin Love hurt. And then last year was maybe the first time where you could say they were the better team, and then they finally knocked off the Warriors.
Right, exactly. Yeah, you brought up that first year when they got – I guess they lost in five to San Antonio with Duncan and Parker and Ginobili when they were in their primes, and LeBron had Boobie Gibson. You know, when you go in with him as your best player, as your second gun, and Mo Williams as your second banana, that's yeah, you're going to get blown out every time. And you're right. The only time he was favored was, I believe, the first year they played Oklahoma City and maybe that first San Antonio series where they had to have Ray Allen win it for them, basically. And also what I don't like is whenever people bring up, oh, LeBron in Game 3, for example, he should have taken that last shot rather than kicking it out to Korver to try to hit that corner three, which you bring in Kyle Korver as your sharpshooter to hit that corner three and put that game away, and then, oh, Michael would have taken the shot, Michael blah, 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 blah. It's like people completely forget that the biggest shots in 91, Paxson hit it. The biggest shot against the Phoenix Suns, Steve Kerr hit it. You know, he had to rely on other people around him to beat Barkley and Kemp and Malone and Stockton those 2 years as well.
And it was a smart play. And then again, it's an unwinnable situation because if LeBron goes up and actually takes the shot, which I don't think was the best shot, you know, because you had Draymond Green coming in on the other side, like, and he misses, he's going to get killed for it. Why did he make that move? Why did he pass it even made?
Exactly. You know, and here's what I was thinking, too. So James Jones, the person who's followed LeBron the most in his career, more than Brian Windhorst, I think. More than him, he's followed LeBron's career. You know, he's not playing James Jones. You're not going to put him in, or even Dahani Jones as well. Why not sub him in, say, at the end of Game 2 in Golden State? You know there's going to be right on the bench, probably be coach's DMP. Sub him in for the last maybe 7 minutes of the game, and just go up and throw an elbow right in Steph Curry's nose. Just pow, right there and break his nose, or KD's, or whatever. They get suspended. Curry's now out with a broken nose, or he's back in trying to play and you can't really see. And you've tilted the favor, and you tilted the math in your favor. Why not do that?
Well, you talk about that physicality. I think the only games that were even remotely interesting to me were games 4 and 5.
Yeah.
Because they were more physical, and we had, you know, the intrigue in Cleveland with Draymond totally playing, you know, peak heel Triple H. And then in game 5, when you had Tristan Thompson and David West getting face-to-face and beard-to-beard and swapping all kinds of bodily fluids in that confrontation. Like, I think that this series showed that the Warriors are the best team today for the way modern basketball is played. But again, like we talk about, you know, the generational questions and the barbershop talk. I am starting to grow weary of the endless comparisons between the Warriors and the old teams. And also I'm getting tired of the old guys coming out and, oh yeah, Magic Johnson, we would have swept them. Come on, man.
Well, no, exactly. It's like Kevin Durant is 6'11" and plays like a two guard. You know, you never saw anything like that in the 80s and 90s. I mean, you look at right now on 30 for 30 on ESPN, they're showing the Celtics-Lakers dynasty or the rivalry back in the 80s. And no one's taking three-pointers outside of, say, Larry Bird. You know, it's a completely different game now. And it's so much faster. People are so much healthier. The travel's better. It's just the athletes today would wipe the floor. It's like saying Bill Russell is the greatest player because he has 10 titles. Well, Bill Russell was 6'8" and playing against a bunch of small 6'1" white guys and just crushing them until he played Wilt Chamberlain, who was his only competition.
And you know, talking about that greatness and building this legacy, let's spin it forward, TJ, because I think that – unless there are some drastic changes made, I think the Warriors have a nice window of maybe 3 to 5 years. And I think a lot of people are like, oh, they can rattle off titles for the next decade. I think that's preposterous just because of the way sports business is set up.
Yeah.
But I think 3 years is 3 or 5 years is what I'm going with this run of dominance from the Warriors. But it might get tenuous around, I guess, 2019 when you got Klay coming up and with his contract and Draymond, I think, is – either that same year or the year after. And as much as we saw the brotherly love and the teammate stuff out there, after a while, you get tired of being the fourth guy. You get tired of being Marty Jannetty. You want to shine. You want the glory, or at least you want a bigger paycheck. So how long do you think the Warriors can keep this team together, TJ? And How long do you think that they can be the dominant force in the National Basketball Association?
I got a good one for you. How long are you going to be Stevie Ray to Booker T? How long are you going to take that going forward? You know?
I mean, suckers got to know.
You got to. Sometimes you got to join NWO White and leave Stevie and leave Booker T away and have Ahmed Johnson come with you and then feud over the letter T. You know, sometimes you got to do that. But no, I was thinking this last night while I watched Steph Curry sit on the bench for the beginning of the fourth quarter and Kevin Durant just go nuclear and take over and pretty much do whatever he wanted to. If you're Golden State and you know the cap's going up because of the new TV deal and you know these people need to come up and get big contracts, why not float the trade out that you're going to move Steph Curry to Charlotte? Call them up. See what they want to offer. See what how many first-round picks they want to offer. See, you know, if they can give up I'm trying to think who they're – I mean, they don't have enough. They don't have a superstar player. Point being, you don't need Steph Curry.
Their best player maybe Kemba?
Yeah. You can bring Kemba Walker in to be your point guard and play the role Steph Curry does and just let KD and Clay and Draymond – you know, run your show, basically. You know, I don't think Steph Curry is needed on a team anymore, so I'm trying to say.
I mean, it's granted it's a small sample size, but through this playoffs and then to a certain degree through the season when he wasn't injured, it clearly was Kevin Durant's
right team.
Like, Steph is still, you know, a top 5 or 10 player in the league, but in terms of whose team this is, much like when LeBron went to Miami right, and D-Wade had to cede the title, the crown over to King James, it was that way in Golden State. Like, it's totally Durant's team now.
And you look at, say, when LeBron was trying to back down, LeBron was going to the rim last night, or even this series. KD goes on LeBron. LeBron stays out towards the perimeter, either by, you know, top of circle or three-point line. LeBron goes on Steph, and it's like you or I, who were in our mid-30s, going as an eighth grader. You know, we're just 6 times bigger than our opposition, and he just can't play defense against that. So, and you saw that in last year. Steph, without KD, relying on Iguodala and relying on Draymond and relying on Klay Thompson, couldn't get the job done. You insert KD, got the job done. So I just think that out of all those moving parts, Steph is the one with the most value and the one that you can easily move and just transition the team over to KD. You're not going to lose any public relations stats because your team is at the peak of what they're going to be worth, you know, fan-wise, value-wise, whatever. So let Steph go somewhere else and just reap the rewards of what you can fetch for what he's available right now.
I agree. And you know, you talk about those moving parts, TJ. Let's flip the script to the other side of the court. And LeBron James obviously has one more year left on his contract. How long term do you see this relationship in Cleveland? Because I think after next year, unless there's a significant player added to the Cavs, I think LeBron might be out of town again.
Even if, say, for example, they call up Indiana or Indianapolis and get Paul George off of the Pacers, which would be a dumb move. The team is still great. You know, as he's proven time and time again, he is the measuring stick in the Eastern Conference with or without a Paul George. If they want to make the move and they want to get another score to help out, the right play is calling up New York and seeing what Carmelo Anthony, his value is. Just because you're not going to have to move a Kevin Love and, you know, not Kyrie, but a J.R. Smith or Tristan Thompson to get a star like a Paul George. For Carmelo, you probably could move one of your lesser assets. As much as J.R. is key to the team, he's not needed if Carmelo's coming in. So you might be able to do that plus a draft pick.
You really think the Knicks want J.R. back?
No, God. I completely forgot he was on that team and how much of a wreck he was. I'll say yes for the sense of he can be an older gentleman and more of a value leader, question mark?
That's a big question mark, TJ.
I guess you would have to move Love. I guess that would be the play just because he would be the star. You'd sell your fan base on, hey, we're moving a star for a star. Love is younger than Carmelo. He'll play more defense. He'll rebound more. He'll open up the floor for Porzingis. So I guess you'd have to do a star-for-star trade there.
Yeah, Love and Porzingis, that would be that's like the Boston Celtics dream front court back in the 80s.
Add Gordon Hayward in there, and yeah, you got basically McHale, a white Robert Parrish, and Larry Bird back, and the group is back. White Chief.
White Chief. I like that. Somebody, one of the listeners, get to work and make a mock-up of that on Photoshop that.
Just like Jason Williams is White Chocolate, White Chief.
But I guess my last thing here on the NBA, TJ, before we move over to what you really want to talk about this week.
Cricket.
I mean, the championships are starting. So
that's
we've got some deep comprehensive coverage from India. We're going to have Jinder Mahal on later to discuss his thoughts on the big matches. But in terms of the NBA, a lot of talk was made during this playoff run of the NBA is boring now, and it's not as fan-friendly, despite the fact that the finals ratings were actually up this year. Just as a viewer, were you intrigued by the playoffs? Or are you a fan of this kind of super team era that we're in now, or do you wish things were there was a bit more parity in the league?
Well, just one, Cleveland is the only super team they have out there. The thing that I like about Golden State being called super team is you look down that roster, the only one that is the superstar, quote-unquote, is Kevin Durant that was added. You know, Curry drafted, Green drafted, Klay Thompson drafted. Those three all came through the NBA draft, and those three flourished in the system that Golden State put in front of them. So they did it like the San Antonio Spurs do it, in that they just went up, used their scouting, found the right players, and put them in there. The only team I am very intrigued about in the East and who I want to see do well is Milwaukee. I want to see Antetokounmpo, what's his face, the old Duke guard that
Jabari?
Yes, Jabari Parker. And I want to see them add a bigger piece. You know, it's like I listen to Bill Simmons' podcast and I hear him talk about Chris Paul going to that team and being that veteran presence. I don't think he's one going to want to go to Milwaukee and play for Jason Kidd. But if they add a solid just point guard to that team, it's going to be someone that I want to see going up against LeBron, hopefully next year in the playoffs. And it's like John Wall. I wish they would have got past Boston, because I'd rather see him and Bradley Beal go up against LeBron, just because I don't see quickness. I don't see them push them and see what it looks like, much like Toronto did last year's Eastern Conference Finals and put them in six games.
Yeah, I agree. I think I like the era we're in now. I do want to see some moves in the offseason. I don't know whether that's somebody going to Cleveland or somebody, like you said, going to Milwaukee to help that young team out. Or even, you know, Chris Paul going to San Antonio.
Right.
I think that would be an intriguing move. But now, you like we said, everybody is chasing the Warriors. So we'll see. They've got an offseason to get their plans together and see what happens next year. But congratulations to the city of Oakland and MC Hammer, the unofficial mayor of Oakland, and the Warriors and Steve Kerr, and in my headcanon, Mark Jackson, because to me, Mark Jackson is still the grandfather of all of this stuff, who never gets any love.
No, it's like Mike Brown, the old Cleveland coach. It's like, yeah, Steve Kerr did a great job. It's like, you realize Mike Brown had to carry – I know a Travelocity garden gnome on the sidelines could still do the job that Mike Brown or Steve Kerr has done with his team, but he still had to do the rotations and sub and, you know, at least get the team on board to sweep their way up to the finals before LeBron was the one at 16-1 that knocked off Golden State that only time.
That might be Steve Kerr's greatest contribution to the league lately. You know, he's hiring getting all these other coaches job opportunities. He got Luke Walton a job. He got Alvin Gentry a job. I'm sure Mike Brown's going to get some looks in the offseason.
Yeah, poor Alvin Gentry, man. He had the job of a lifetime and then goes to New Orleans and now stuck with Boogie and Anthony Davis. Oof. I mean, it's great. They have two awesome players that would have done well in 1995, but now in 2017 when everybody's shooting threes and It's just not good, man. It's just not good.
Yeah, so that was our NBA Finals recap, and I'm sure Marcus will have some thoughts when he returns to the podcast. But now, TJ, let's move over to what you really want to talk about.
Yeah, U.S. men's soccer tying against Mexico.
Well, after that, we've got another segment just set aside for Bruce Arena conversation. But we're going to talk some hockey, the Stanley Cup playoffs. The Stanley Cup Finals ended, and the Pittsburgh Penguins are once again your champions as they defeated the gritty Nashville Predators. But we're not even going to talk about the on-ice action. We're first going to talk about the whole Sidney Crosby and P.K. Subban dust-up, and I'm going to do my best Sean Hannity here and lead you into a question and box you in to a position that you didn't ever state. So, TJ, I'm wondering, why are you a proponent of hate crimes in sports?
Well, as everybody knows, I am a giant racist. So, no. I'm sure that gets like completely just taken out of context and just used against me forever and ever, really. That's
gonna be... we're gonna save it in the archive. Yeah, that's just in case.
That little 1.5 second soundbite, I'm gonna be going for like some, my kid's gonna go for the college and be like, hey, didn't your dad on this one podcast back in 2017 just blatantly call out racism? Yeah, that's gonna be great. I'm so glad my third base coach in my head didn't stop me from trying to make that joke. No.
Be like one of those campaign.
Right, exactly.
Ads. We'll just play that, and then we'll have like the ominous voice. TJ McClune, he's a racist.
Obviously, he lived in Indianapolis, which is real close to one of the KKK rally points. So that's obviously going to happen. No, it's like that Simpsons episode where Homer's driving the gummy candy off the girl's butt.
And it
gets edited, so he's just saying sweet can. So that's going to be my sweet can moment right there, and just me just gargling that. That's exactly what happened. No, so here, and this is our little dust up last night on Twitter between myself at TJ McLoon and Marcus and, you know, the tease, which was best for business, baby. It's best for business right there. That's what they call a tease. So when Mike Milbury said P.K. Subban had it coming, he was exactly right on the money to say he had it coming. It's like... I'm going to go right down, keep on going down the barrel here. Manny Machado getting thrown at in baseball, right? You take too long on a home run trot, or you take someone out, you know, you got to have a receipt coming to you. P.K. Subban, he didn't take anybody out. He'd do anything hot-dogging like that. But before Sid put his head to the ice multiple times, Subban took his elbow and his forearm and decided to throw it as hard as he could into Sid's face in game two. Sid was sliding to the ice on the boards, on his butt, slid into the boards, and a PK, if you go back and watch this, he takes his fist, throws it in Sid's face, and then whenever Sid's trying to get up, takes his elbow, throws it into Sid's face. But at the end of game three, which the microphones caught up on this on the Showtime reality series, when PK had the whole Listerine thing, which he made up, which he did. You can go back and listen to this on Showtime. Nothing was said about bad breath. It's PK going up to Sidney and says, tell him to F off. And Sidney, unprovoked, had to go back to him saying, hey, get the bleep out of here. You know, why are you coming up to me right now? Your team just won. Go back and celebrate with them. Don't focus on me. And so when PK and Sid get tied up and PK is holding Sid's leg on the ground in the grapevine, which he looked very much like Kurt Angle doing it. His kid's trying to get up, and in doing so, he's trying to let him know, you better get off me. And doing so, he's putting his head into the ice over and over again. Should have been a roughing call? Yes. Did PK deserve it for getting a roughing call on top of that by putting Sid in the headlock when they both got up? Of course. So that's why Milbury said he had it coming to him, just because all this time, pin up. And that's what you get whenever you just constantly just mess with someone.
So basically, you're hating on PK for being a great technical wrestler. He's got the grapevine. He's got the phenomenal forearm. He's got a spinning back fist. He sounds like a very proficient New Japan strong style performer.
I'm trying to say Sidney didn't want none. No, he didn't want none. Basically, is what I'm trying to say.
Okay, I buy your explanation, TJ. I think I would have liked it more if Marcus were here so he could yell at you. Because A, that'd be fun for me, and B, that draws ratings.
That's true.
We could build up a feud.
I could keep on saying bro, too, and just really create controversy, creating cash. Bro.
We'd be the lead on Barstool Sports tomorrow.
Well, yeah, that's exactly my little 1.5 second out of context comment, too. That will lead it off right there.
you and Clay Travis, they have a show in no time.
Oh, I think I will be right next to Hannity and Tucker Carlson around Fox News. It'd be great.
Hey, I mean, this is Trump's America. Your boy Hank Williams is back on Monday Night Football.
It's amazing how people think that it's all because of Trump is why Hank Williams is back on. It's like, no, he had a catchy song. He said something insanely stupid on Fox News back in 2010 or 11 or 12, whenever it was. 6 years has passed, and now ESPN wants to bring ratings back, and they bring Hank back to sing his little 30-second song. Whoop-de-freaking-do. It's like when WWE brings back Hulk Hogan eventually, people are going to be like, oh, it's because of the White House and Trump and blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, time passed. wounds healed, and he was brought back because of whatever reason he got brought back for.
It is a great song.
Yeah, it's fine. I mean, just it's amazing how people can wrap up one small thing into a reason why ESPN is bringing him back, because they don't want to be looked at as a liberal leftist, blah, blah, blah. It's just, it's stupid. It's just like whenever they said, oh, they're covering Kaepernick specially instead of killing him. It's like, no, you're covering an athlete who's trying to use his platform for good and exercise his right for freedom of speech, not because he hates troops or whatever. He's actually doing some good in the community, so you probably should shine a light on him instead of, say, someone that's being charged for domestic violence or whatever.
I like how you brought up Williams Jr., though, because it brings me right back into hockey. Because to me, one of the more interesting things about this series was the opponent of Pittsburgh, and that was Nashville.
Christ.
And even more to the point, the Nashville fan. So what did you make of all the Predators' rowdy friends coming over during the series, TJ?
Bunch of bandwagon stupid idiots.
But shouldn't you be happy that hockey is growing and flourishing in areas where it's not supposed to?
No, I'd rather Quebec have a team over Nashville. And furthermore, huge missed opportunity by NBC by not having Carrie Underwood sing the intro to either Sunday Night Hockey, to Wednesday Night Hockey, to Friday Night, whenever the game was on NBC. She should have been front and center saying, I've been waiting all day for whatever insert night it is for hockey, and they kick it off there. So that right there is a huge opportunity missed.
And it was. And I kind of like the Nashville Oven. I mean, we had Dixie Carter singing, I think, was it? It was Ludacris. She was singing DMX.
Oh, God. And that's another thing, too. As, you know, that's got to annoy you. It's you guys. Wow. I am just horribly towing the Fox News line right now. Oh, what do you mean, you people? Yeah, exactly. That's how enraged I am from this dang Nashville and just so many just out of rhythm and just awfulness singing Party Up by DMX. Looks like my mom, who's 55 years old, 56 years old in Pittsburgh, her singing DMX right now, or being in Vegas and her loving Jay Quan's Tipsy. Like, it's just, it's so awful, man. And just, it's awful all around, just terrible. They couldn't probably, if DMX was sitting next to them, they probably wouldn't think who it is. They'd probably be hiding their perks.
I don't know. Dixie Carter seems down. I mean, she put the title on Pac-Man Jones that one time.
That's true. And probably Ron Killings as well.
Yeah.
See, I can review it.
I'm sure Dixie knows.
Yeah. And I think she gave a job to Monty Brown as well before he flew off and pounced his way out of the company.
Oh, Monty Brown. Shout out to Monty Brown, wherever he is. But real quick, in terms of the actual on-ice action, I thought that, like, I was actually invested in some of the games, TJ, which is a remarkable feat to get me to actually sit down and watch a hockey game start to finish. And from what I saw, I guess it was good hockey, except for the blowout games. But in terms of, A, the Penguins repeating, and, B, kind of, the bandwagoning fans, I guess, in terms of Nashville. Well, what do you think this finals does for the NHL?
So, I do say Nashville is a bunch of bandwagon fans, which it's unfair to a point because they did sell out all their games this year. They're 41 home games, so kudos to them for actually building a good fan base that actually knows the sport and will go to the games in February when there's Ottawa's in town, or they're going to see the Brooklyn Islanders, and no one cares about that team. So they'll be back in the sense of the fans will keep on coming. Their team is still good with Pekka, Philip Forsberg, Mike Fisher may be back with the team. P.K. Subban is an elite defenseman, and I'm glad he got a platform to shine like the Stanley Cup Finals, and he was able to be front and center and show his personality, so that's great. Pittsburgh, they have a great chance to three-peat next year. Their core is locked up until 2022 with Crosby, Malkin. Chris Letang's their best defenseman, didn't play a lick in the playoffs because of a neck injury that's had him out since January, where he had to have surgery on his neck. Matt Murray is a 23-year-old rookie goalie who has now two Stanley Cups. Jake Gensel is a rookie. They have more reserves coming from the minor league system, from juniors. So this team is going to be around for a very, very long time to be the, you know, the thorn in the side of the Washington Capitals and the rest of the Eastern Conference. They are the New England Patriots of the NHL. It's basically what it boils down to. Them and the Patriots, they're one and the same.
Only less hateable. Then again, I'm not a big hockey fan, so maybe they are hockey, as hateable as the Patriots.
Hockey Twitter hates the Penguins. Hates with a passion.
I think maybe it's just because from an outsider's point of view, like Sidney Crosby, even though I know he's the best player in the NHL, like he doesn't get the over coverage that Brady does.
Right. Well, it's because ESPN doesn't have NHL. If they had the NHL, you would see Sid, you know, front and center on the ESPYs, or Sid on a bunch of the ESPN commercials, or Malkin doing, you know, he hacks in the ESPN database and causes all the lights to go off. I don't know why he would, but, you know, something with Malkin and Evgeny, you know, that whole tie. Not drawing comparisons, but we'll let your listeners draw the comparisons there.
So that's our Stanley Cup coverage.
Right.
You got like 10 minutes of hockey out of me, TJ, which is something I don't think even Marcus was able to do.
It's all about the white Canadian guy pinning down the African-Canadian on the ice and jamming his head in there like it's the Rodney King riots. So I'm glad we can finally get to that position.
I mean, all sports are more fun when you add a racial element. That's
of
why
course.
Floyd Mayweather is a millionaire.
And why he's going to make $1 billion on the Conor McGregor fight, even though McGregor has no chance now of winning that thing. No, I mean, it's amazing how he's going to make so many people angrily stupid and buying into that pay-per-view. It's unbelievable. He's going to make so much money on people's stupid anger.
I mean, just the buy rates from Ireland alone will be enough for Floyd to live off of for the rest of his life.
It's going to get a 100% ranking or a 100% rating in Boston.
that'll be enough think pieces for Barstool for you.
Oh,
for weeks.
Yeah. I mean, he's going to be the great white hope. It's not even going to land a punch. He won't land like some body shots on Floyd, but Floyd's just going to be, he's going to kill Connor in that fight. It won't even be close. It's not even going to be close in that fight.
Yeah, the only thing that fight is going to serve to do is put more money in Floyd's bank account. And speaking of money in the bank, TJ.
Segway.
That's what we call a segue in this business,
my friend.
The WWE's got a big pay-per-view event coming out this weekend. And, you know, we can – I don't want to go match by match because I don't have time for such foolishness. But just in terms of WWE programming up to this point, TJ, I guess since – WrestleMania. What's kind of been your impression of what's been going on, particularly when it comes to SmackDown?
I'm glad that it's given chances to, say, Fandango and Tyler Breeze to go off and do their own thing. It's amazing when you give talented people time to actually be entertaining. They can go off and do what they do best, which is entertain you. Like, you know, the Usos. They actually got to be themselves, which are very entertaining, and they now have the SmackDown Tag Team titles because they're a very talented team in the ring, and now you let them not be cartoon characters themselves and be real people, and they are very good in what they do. Jinder Mahal, they need a big villain, much like JBL back in the early 2000s.
Yeah, did you ever think you would live in a time when Jinder Mahal was your world champion?
Especially the week before when he concussed Finn Balor with that forearm shot that looked like Jack Tatum back in the 70s. I mean, it's super stiff. They sent him off the SmackDown where you think he's just going to continue floating off in the ether with like the Ty Dillingers of the world. And now he wins a 5-pick challenge and beats Randy Orton. Good for him. It's like when Sheamus got his first run and you're like, who in the bleep is this pale white guy from Ireland, Sheamus? And now he's, you know, one of the fixtures of the company for the last 10 years. So hopefully this is the catapult for Jinder, where he's a fixture on the company that can be the mega heel that every good babyface needs.
I agree, and I've actually been pretty impressed with Jinder, particularly his mic work, which I think has gotten better over the past few months. And you talk about this land of opportunity on SmackDown with guys like AJ Styles and Kevin Owens and Shinsuke Nakamura.
Right.
What has been your opinion of Nakamura since his debut? Because while I've enjoyed it, I think that it hasn't gone as good as it probably could have. But at least he's not, you know, throwing salt in people's eyes and coming out to flute music.
Or spitting mist. That's another big Japanese stereotype is the green mist. And I'd say bring back Mr. Fuji, but I don't think he's still on the earth with us anymore. I think he passed away a couple years ago. We'll say yes.
That would be a hell of a trick if they were able to do that.
Right, just hologram him in there, much like they had the hologram snake for Randy Orton during WrestleMania's entrance. Just horribly out of taste that way. No, I mean, for Nakamura, the jury's still out for him in the sense that, you know, it's hard to say after one big pay-per-view match against Ziggler that they're mishandling him. Let's give it 6 months, so after SummerSlam, see what program he's in, see if he's working a top match against, like, a Kevin Owens or Randy Orton, or if he's in a title picture or wherever he's at, and we'll go from there.
And, like, even if he is, I'm not going to say mishandled, but even if he is not handled to his optimal potential, like, they've always got that ace in the hole that they can just throw out AJ and Nakamura.
Right, exactly.
And heat him right back up.
Or Shinsuke versus Cena. Let's see that one, just because Cena's one of their best workers in the company. Even though he's 38, 39 years old, you throw him in there and let Cena run some code reds and take some stiff Kinshasas, and we'll go from there. And if you want a marquee matchup and a big fight feel, Cena Nakamura, that's printing money right there.
So are you looking forward to Money in the Bank this weekend, or is it something that you might not watch the night of, but you'll check out later in the week?
I mean, I'll be out of town, so I kind of have to catch it, you know, on the flip side. But I'll watch the ladder matches. I love they're giving the women a chance to have the ladder match. I wish they would let the women do a Royal Rumble in January. Let them, even though that would probably be a popcorn match and let people get time to, you know, go to the bathroom, get food or whatever. But still, you let them, and you treat them more as equals that way.
Yeah, I think this actually is more historic than the, what was it, the big Hell in a Cell match?
Yeah, with Sasha. No, you're
like,
exactly
I think this,
right.
This will end up being more impactful in the long run for the women than that match was.
Right, and, I mean, who's going to take the crazy bump off the ladder because you know it's coming? I guess that would go to Becky Lynch because she seems like the person that doesn't mind throwing caution to the wind and sacrificing her body for the pop of a crowd, but I'll be very interested to see it.
I say it'll probably either be Becky or either Becky, Charlotte, because Charlotte is not afraid to do those crazy spots, or your boy Ellsworth gets into it.
Oh my God! And that's a land of opportunity. How opportunist is him? He doesn't even wrestle anymore. He just stands by Carmella's side and is super entertaining by looking like Mitch McConnell in 45 years.
I was gonna go for the easy no chin joke, but I'm not gonna be mean to James Ellsworth this week.
I wish you would come up the Vince McMahon remix with no chin in hell. Maybe.
Oh man, so that's Money in the Bank real quick because we have our main event set, and it might be the biggest dissonance between the match I'm looking forward to with the event with the dumbest name, and that is Brock Lesnar and Samoa Joe at Great Balls of Fire.
I can't wait. I think I saw the joke online that Johnny B. Badd is going to come back. Mark Merrill's going to reprise Johnny B. Badd because Vince McMahon loved the character so much, and he now owns WCW, that they can get at least a six-month run out of Merrill coming back as that character.
See, that would be great just for this show alone, because to this day, one of the greatest revelations ever on this podcast was when I let Marcus know and let the scales fall from his eyes that Mark Merrill wasn't black.
What? Wait, no. What?
I mean, I don't know if you heard, TJ, but Mark Merrill, as brilliant as Johnny B. Badd was, Mark Merrill's some Italian dude.
No.
He's like
really?
Italian and Jewish.
Really? The same thing that Marcus had, I'm having the same reaction here. Really?
That might be like the only acceptable use of blackface in history.
Really?
Johnny B. Badd is not black.
Wow. He's just very tan. He's like Rachel Dozell.
he was Rachel Dozell before Rachel Dozell.
Wow. That is very surprising. Huh.
Yeah, that was one of the greatest revelations because Marcus was done for the rest of the show.
I'm the same way. I'm about to just tap out right here. That's like a Tyson uppercut right there. That's just really. He was not even he, like I'm having flashbacks to not only John B. Badd and the popgun and confetti thing he had, but but also his later years in WWE, where he came out in the boxing robe and the do-rag and Jacqueline.
Yep, and he's like, if you've seen something, because he's a motivational speaker now, if you've seen any of his clips online, like, A, he's really good, and B, I thought, like, if you don't know that Johnny B. Badd isn't black, like, you could be fooled into thinking he was, like, some black Southern youth pastor or something like that. Because he's got the cadence, he's got the delivery, and it's like, yeah, Johnny B. Badd, he might be one of the few that it will allow to wear blackface.
Really? Huh. How about that?
He's a bad, bad man.
No kidding, man. I think it's also because, like I just said, he came out with Jacqueline, wore the do-rag and the boxing robe, and you're like, all right, yeah, black guy. Sure. He probably came out to some like ripped, like Jim Johnson, whatever he thought like straight hip hop was. You could throw him in the Nation of Domination with Farouk and D'Lo and The Rock and Henry and be like, yeah, black guy. All right, that makes sense. All right, that fits in.
To be fair, he's darker than Marcus Vandenberg.
Yeah.
I mean.
And probably Drake as well.
That is true. That is true.
Wow.
Drake, who I'm sure is celebrating the Warriors championship, since that's probably one of his 30 teams that he roots for.
And I wish Marcos was on too, because I could ask him this. What's up with Toronto people and always bandwagoning all these teams? Like, Bieber gets photographed in a Penguins jersey before, you know, all his other teams. Drake pops on whatever bandwagon he wants to hop on. What's up with Toronto and, like, loving to own as many American teams as possible?
I've got a better question for you, TJ McClune. What the hell is up with Bray Wyatt and JoJo?
Ooh. Oh, yeah. Wait. Another person. Because her dad's Jose Offerman. So
yes. She
technically, well, I'm not sure who her mom is, but, you know, I think her mom might be a white woman. But, you know, like, someone you'd be like, yeah, black girl. Nope. Jose Offerman. So not technically, I don't think.
Yeah, JoJo, who has had an interesting dating record in the WWE, because I believe it was a few years ago when Marcus was at a SummerSlam party. I think it was the SummerSlam party that former co-host Alfred Cunningham got denied from. And he had to, like, walk sadly down the street as Jim Ross shook his head.
Aww.
My God, big nasty, you couldn't get in.
Aww.
But I believe at that party, Marcus was informing me that JoJo and Randy Orton, like, that's where they struck up their little relationship. And now, apparently, JoJo and Bray had a little fling.
Why did she get kicked off Total Divas if she's, like, hooking up with all these top guys? I would love to see her on Total Divas.
She'd be a draw on Total Divas.
Yeah, she was on season one and then completely got dropped off. I think that's a horrible job by the producers to drop her off and, you know, not bring her back. I'd rather see her over Renee Young and Dean Ambrose.
Yeah. And to be fair, to her credit, I mean, obviously Bray Wyatt is a successful young man. He's a former champion. And, if you know, he's the eater of worlds, so I suppose he's pretty good at eating things that aren't worlds. So, yeah, he's got that going for him, which is nice, TJ.
And that's great balls of fire right there.
And I don't know how we make the transition from Bray Wyatt and JoJo to our final topic this week, and that is the untimely passing of Adam West. So maybe instead of trying to find a segue, TJ, we'll just take a pause for the cost and listen to the classic Batman theme song.
All right.
The classic theme song from the Batman television show, and yes, Adam West, the classic Batman. He's not the original Batman, as some people have said online, because there were, I guess, other people that portrayed Batman before Adam West, but he is the classic TV Batman. He passed away this past week due to a battle with leukemia, and he was 88. When he passed. So, A, TJ, were you a fan of the old Batman show? And B, you know, outside of Batman, Adam West has done a bunch of different things, including playing himself as the mayor on Family Guy. What's your favorite Adam West memory?
I mean, I'm a little too young, I guess, being 35, to remember the old, Batman with the POW and the WAP and the Bat Phone and the Penguin being, back in the 60s and 70s. It's more of my dad's stuff from right there. So I guess, I was surprised to know that he was the principal in Pete and Pete, the old Nickelodeon show. I had no clue he was on that. So I would have.
And he was Catman on the Fairly Odd Parents.
Huh.
Which makes sense.
I did not know that either. You blow my mind. Like the second time in the last 10 minutes about that. But no, I guess it's great that he's still able to find work as Adam West himself, the mayor of Quahog. So I'm looking forward to see what they do in the upcoming season of Family Guy, of this little send-off. It's going to be probably funny, and they'll probably have him try to fight the ocean again and lose, and that's how he dies off. Or he actually gets, eaten by a big clam. Whatever happens, it's going to be funny, and I'm going to look forward to seeing what they do to honor him and to write him off.
Yeah, like, I remember the old show from, I guess, watching reruns on the Superstation, on TBS, like, coming home from school, and, mainly during the summertime, because there wasn't a whole lot on, and so when, my mom wasn't watching her stories, I would flip the channel and see what was on, and TBS was always good, because it was either wrestling, the right. Braves, Tom and Jerry, or Batman, and, like the old show, it's corny, it's cheesy, but it was fun. And I guess he recently, maybe it was last year or the year before, they made one of those direct-to-video DC animated movies.
Mm.
It's like Return of the Caped Crusaders or something like that, with the original, well, as many as the original cast that were still alive, with him and Burt Ward playing Robin. And they're like, you know what? I'm not mad at you, Adam West. Keep getting them checks.
No, of course not. Yeah, I mean, if you can keep working, especially doing a voice acting role, that, by all means, that's probably paid well, and you probably set up a nice residual plan, and yeah, good for him.
Yeah, I think maybe my favorite thing about Adam West, TJ, was probably that he didn't take himself too seriously.
Yeah, that too, like, yeah.
We see a lot of people doing, and Dan Le Batard is like one of my favorite sports shows to listen to, and frequently on that show, just, joking around. And like, I think his last appearance, which might have been a couple weeks ago, he was on with Jeff Garland.
Right.
Jeff Garland was doing a Batman impression.
Mm-hmm.
And then Adam West was doing the Batman impression after Jeff Garland. And so it's like, yeah, he's not one of those celebrities that is too cool for school. So I always respected that about Adam West.
And the show is cursed, and they kill everybody off that goes on the show. So it's good for the Levitar.
Alan Thicke gone, Adam West gone.
Bill Paxton.
Bill Pullman.
No, Pullman, that's right.
Yeah, Bill Pullman gone, so yeah. Dan Levitar, if he calls, don't answer the phone.
Nope, Allison Turner, block that number.
You don't get the show, TJ.
I do not. I want spicy hot takes, not race talk.
Yes. I mean, even though, given the content of this podcast, I wouldn't know that just from listening to you. But yes, you are now officially this show's second favorite. Well, I'll say third favorite hockey analyst fourth. You're the Clay Thompson. You're the fourth string on this team behind Barry Melrose, of course, behind Roy Bellamy from the Dan Le Batard Show, and the hockey character that stands far away from the mic on the Dan Le Batard Show.
I am just four Shaka Bras away from being the number one guy.
just four Shaka Bras away. But TJ, as we close out this week's edition of the podcast, thanks as always for joining us, my brother. Where can the people check you out on social media to find out more about Inspire Wrestling? And, if they have any comments about some of your questionable discussion points this week, where can they address those questions with you?
Of course. So my Fox News show comes on at 7 o'clock every night, as always, which is great. No, so Inspire Pro Wrestling, as always, we have a show coming up July 2nd, which is going to be a great night with ACH headlining the show. So I'm excited to see him back in Austin and come back in the Inspire Pro ring. That's what my primarily role is, and what I'm focused on here in Austin, along with the writing and podcasting work for Texas HS Football, which I have a spot coming out, I think, later on this week with three Texas former players between the Cowboys and Texans who should retire as a Texan or Cowboy, which really Matt Schaub should retire as a Houston Texan, not as an Atlanta Falcon. So hopefully they bring him back because he's great. And also at TJ Macklin, MCALLON, on Twitter is where you can send all your vile and hate towards me for that 1.5 seconds where I pledge my loyalty to the alt-right nation.
There he is. He is the Sean Spicer of the sports world. He is TJ McClune, and I'm sure he'll have plenty of thoughts on sports and politics as the months go on. And maybe we'll have TJ back when the Warriors visit the White House so we can get a in-depth coverage of Draymond Green and President Trump.
Great. So that means I'm never coming back on. That's awesome.
That is going to be interesting, though, because Steve Kerr, not a Trump fan, I wonder.
Well, they already said they aren't going to the White House. I think they made that known, like, within – I think KD tried to do a Stone Cold salute, which he failed miserably at. And while they're doing that, some PR guy is like, yeah, we're not doing the White House visit. Thanks, but no thanks.
The Warriors might not be going as an organization, but that can't stop Draymond.
Nah, I would love to see him just put bum rush Spicer the way that Gronkowski did on the press meeting, and just look at the guys of the New York Times and just go nope, and next question, and
Putin, no.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I hope that drunk Draymond and drunk Clay Sessions.
Yeah.
Yeah, right, exactly. I hope that they just bomb rush the microphone during the Golden State Parade, much like they did in 2015, where you can tell they haven't slept in like 4 days, and they just start trolling LeBron and everyone.
Oh, we'll just have to wait and see, TJ. And in 2017, much like the WWE, anything can happen. Nothing is out of bounds, and so we'll just have to see what this crazy year has in store for us. But what we have in store for you listeners next week is another program, and I think hopefully Brother Marcus will return from assignment, and we can get his thoughts on the finals. We can get his long-awaited Vanderburgers review, and who knows, we'll probably have some ratchetness to talk about in segment 4. So we have all that when we return next week to the King Cave, same black time, same black channel. See what I did there?
I like that. I like that. I saw what you did there. Yeah. I would comment on that one, but I've already dug myself in a deep for a hole enough. So I'll just sit on the sidelines there and cannonball my way out of this pool.
All right. Well, we'll let you get back to what you've got going on at the McClune compound, my brother. Thank you for filling in this weekend. We'll talk to you down the road, my friend.
As always, love being on here with you guys.
All right. You can, again, check TJ out and then find out all the good things he's got going on. And you can check me out at N8, M-O-Z-A-I-K, Nate Mosaic on Twitter. You can check Marcus out at Marco Will on Twitter, M-A-R-C-O-W-I-L-L. Follow the show, Cospod, KOS_POD, Facebook page, all that good stuff. Go to iTunes, Stitcher, Podcast Addict, like, rate, review, subscribe, and most importantly, share the show with your friends. That's going to do it for our show this week, and we thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading the show, and we'll do it again next week with an all-new edition of the world's most dangerous sportscast, or most dangerous podcast about sports, which I guess could be considered a sportscast, the Kings of Sport podcast. So, for Marcus Vandenberg, for TJ McClune, I am the Godfather, Nate Milton. Rest in peace. Right now, because you've been down with the king.
Let's go, but inconspicuously, through the window. Our job is finished.
Well, that's it for this edition of the Royal Rant. Agree with our take? Think we're off base? Or maybe you've got something completely different that you need to vent about. Well, tell us why you're mad on Facebook, facebook.com/thekingsofsport, or on Twitter, Cospod on Twitter. That's KOS_POD, Cospod on Twitter.
Time is really wasted. Fight the power.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?